All right. Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the call and talk show about health and natural medicine. It's February 27th, 2019. I am Fran Sorch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host, Ron Meniza, is off to the sun. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. You can also call in at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. All right. Today, it's my pleasure to introduce my very special guest, Eagle Moon Rays. She's a certified hypnotist, avatar practitioner, Melchizedek practitioner, Reiki practitioner, and mother of three. Welcome, Eagle Moon.
Thank you, Fran. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you back.
Thanks. Yeah. It's always fun.
Yeah. So, all right. So tell me what's going on. You have a new mission, Live, Love, Laugh. Tell me what's going on with you.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's like when you're on the planet walking your journey, all of a sudden, you know, at one point, it seems like everything connects, like all the big moments of your life and the things that you studied and people who came into your life, all of a sudden seem to make this beautiful picture of what your mission in the world is. And so, you know, since I was a little girl, I've been saying the words live, love, laugh, live, love, laugh. Since I was like 10 years old, they were three words that really pulled me through life and really supported me. But it wasn't until I put the word "and" in the middle that the whole situation changed. So I no longer see them as three separate words. And when I was younger, that's, you know, live, yup, live, and then love, yup, love, laugh, love. They were like three separate components. When I put the word "and" in the middle, it became a purpose, live, love, and laugh.
Oh.
Yeah. And so that's the purpose.
Is live, love, and oh, my God.
Yeah. And so years ago, when I was stepping onto the I'm going to be divorced journey and all that that teaches you, I was crying and crying and crying. And I went for this walk around Andover Lake. And this voice, you know, that inner voice, the intuition or the higher self that, you know, doesn't sound like your normal thinking voice. Mm-hmm. Well, says to me, step out of fear and stand in love. And I looked down and I was standing in like all these clumps of mud that were in the shapes of hearts.
Oh,
yeah. And
that's
so
nice.
It was very metaphoric because from that moment forward in time, I've been seeing hearts everywhere in all different types of shapes. And so I knew that I was moving and navigating through all the fears of my life to start living love, authentic love. Not, you know, we all need to learn about conditional love. And most of us are raised with the understanding of conditional love, not unconditional love. So part of the journey is letting go of all those conditions which create fear. If I'm this way, then I won't be loved. If I'm this way, then I won't be loved. If I don't do this, then I'll, you know, I won't be loved. And so when you move through those conditions, which is actually the journey through fear, each one of us has our own path that leads us out. You step into a life that's just completely different. And so what I am wanting to serve humanity in this way is to start from the beginning. You know, people in love really are in love, and that is a really juicy place to be. But what I realized is most of us, when we're in that place of being in love, we then move into like marriage. And nothing's wrong with marriage. I love being married. I think it's really great. But what happens is frequently when you get that piece of paper, people are like, oh, a piece of paper is not going to make any difference. Well, you're right. It's not the paper, but it's the new identities that create challenges for many people. So you go from being a couple in love to now being in an identity of husband or wife. And so what I want to do is help people navigate through their archetypes. And an archetype is just the blueprint that creates the wife identity and the blueprint that creates the husband identity and the blueprint that creates the marriage and the blueprint that creates the family and the home and all of that. And like help people create, like demolish the old blueprint and kind of redraw a new blueprint so they can begin to build their family and their relationship in their home with a very strong, stable foundation. And then you go upwards from there. So that's where I'm going. And then there's the love for everything. There's the love for the family, the love for each other, the love for the home, the love for the game. You know, I work with athletes, the love for the arts. I work with artists and performers and the love of school and the love of learning. And so instead of seeing each component of like Reiki and Avatar and the Melchizedek method of healing, all those things as fragments and things that I do that are separate, that all the people in the world have lots of different ways of evolving. And so all those different tools that I have and the skill set, depending on where people are in their spiritual growth or their evolution, you know, I have a tool to meet just about everybody on their journey, where they are, to help them evolve to their next step.
That's so exciting. So this is, I've heard you talk about like live, love, and laugh. I associate with you for years and years and years. But so what I'm hearing is that you're at a place in your life and your helping self and your practice where you're synthesizing the various tools that you have so that they're all one. And what live, love, and laugh is now all one, but also the things that you're, all of your training and all of the things that you're putting together, you're putting them all together. And so you're taking how you're helping people to the next level. Does that sound
accurate?
Yeah,
sounds really accurate.
Okay. Yeah. So how does that translate into the real world? What are you doing? Are you doing something differently now? And if so, what is that?
Well, I'm a JP as well as a spiritual minister, so I can marry people.
That's nice.
I know. That's exciting. Yeah. And, you know, as part of the whole marriage process, you know, helping people create their unique union is really fun. And then in that capacity, I can also help them redraw up their blueprint and, you know, to create their next step. You know, we put a lot of attention on the wedding, but the next step is the marriage. And I remember when I had my first baby, all the attention was on, like, I did it. I built a house, got married, quit my job, had a baby in 4 months.
Wow.
So I was a little disoriented. But once I had my baby, it was like, oh, now I need to know how to feed it. So it's like all my attention was on birthing the baby, getting the baby, and now it's living with the baby, caring for the baby, feeding the baby, changing the diaper for the baby. Like I, as a babysitter, I learned all that, but I did not know how to nurse. So now that was the next challenge. And I find that this is the case with a lot of couples. There's so much excitement on the wedding and then in the honeymoon, but then what?
Right.
You know, there's still a creative process after. And when I was first married, my former husband and I recognized this in each other, but we didn't have the tools and the skill set to help us move through it. And one day in frustration, he's like, you're your mother now. And I said, and you're your father. I didn't marry your father. But it was so poignant because we both knew something profound was happening, but we really didn't know how to navigate. Yeah. So now I have a skill set to help people navigate through that, your mother, your father, reality. And that's not, you know, everybody doesn't do that, you know, but the reality is we are now creating new identities for ourselves, which, you know, when we move in and out of identities, we really, our whole consciousness changes, our minds change, our, you know, and that's not like multiple personalities. I mean, we do create identities like putting on clothing, and it's good to go into a relationship and in a marriage knowing that when you become husband and wife, these are new roles that are being added that are very unknown to many people.
Yeah. And so the thing is, when people get together, you know, when I think about marrying somebody, I think about there's an element of responsibility there that this is a person that I've given myself to, who I'm going to look out for, and that person's going to look out for me. And there's a way of looking out for each other that's different in quality than any other relationship that I have, that like I have this person's back at a very, very deep level. And, you know, like when I think about how I am with Ron, I mean, we're not legally married, but, you know, we've been together for 14 years. And, you know, I think about how my commitment to Ron, it's huge. And I feel like one of my jobs in caring for him as a human is that I have his back so he can be who he is. I am in, part of my job is to be in care of his soul.
Yes.
Like I watch out for him, body, mind, and spirit, even if I'm not even thinking about it. You know, my connection to Ron is such that, I mean, I love him and I admire him and, you know, he's a righteous, there's a lot of reasons why I love him. And then I just plain love him because he's just the best reason to be in love with somebody is because you are. There's no reason,
right.
You just are. But there's also concrete reasons why I am with him, and that have to do with, you know, the kind of person that he is, that he's, I just really believe he's one of the most righteous people I have ever met, if not the most righteous person I've ever met. But so my job is to be in care of his soul. So I look out for his physical health to the level of, if I see a rash on him, I want to know what's going on with the rash. And to the other level of, if he's all cranky and weird, I kind of want to know why. And I'm able to step back and make space for that. And in the very large sense, he's reinventing himself now because he's new. He has a new job. And so we're trying to work this out and fit this into our lives. So there's a lot of moving parts there. And he looks out for me in the same ways. And there are subtle things that we know about each other that we can't even articulate, that if you asked us, we could probably tell you. But it's so nuanced, and it's so deep, and it's so wide. And that kind of connection takes time, and it takes patience. The other thing you have to realize when you're in a relationship is that the person you marry on February 27, 2019, is not going to be the same person on February 27, 2020. You have to allow for fluidity, and you have to also allow for change, that person is going to go through changes in their life, and you have to be okay with that. And you can't go, well, I expected you to be this person, and now you're that person. Well, the nature of life is change. So I mean, I just wonder if one of the things you encounter when you're working with couples is that they have expectations, and then over time, perhaps expectations are not met, and people get frustrated, and they don't know what to do with that. So when you're working with a couple, do you start with them? Like, where do you start with a couple when you're working with them?
With the union, it's all about love. You know, when you're in, like what you're saying is very poignant, because when, you know, love is really that soul connection. It's that oneness feeling. And in that place, you know, the external circumstances can all be changing, but the soul is a little bit different. It's stable. It's like the eye of the storm. And So starting with where the couple is in their love relationship and in their capacity, you know, it's really about navigating through the ideas and the beliefs so that they can come to an understanding. And that's where the solid foundation comes, is to realize that we're really not who we think we are. And, you know, there's my needs, your needs, and then our needs. And really putting all of the pieces together and to really support from unconditional love. And couples, they hit their conditions. I mean, that's the part of the journey of being in a relationship, is you start to discover what are your conditions. And just knowing that this is part of the adventure of being in a long-term loving relationship where you want to build a family and move on, you know, it's important that we realize that what we were doing and what we were taught is really not life-sustaining in the way humanity is evolving. We would all do well to be more conscious of the whole union process so that we're very committed to what we're doing, so that our family structure is very stable and sturdy, so that we can all grow, so the whole family can grow. You know, when you raise your kids in love, it's a different ball of wax. It's not the same. And that's, you know, what I'm talking about is the evolution of the family. This is not, you know, come to me and, you know, I'll snap my fingers and everything will be rosy. This is a spiritual growth process that starts with your commitment to each other as a couple and then your determination to raise a family that then forwards your purpose in life. You know, this is about really conscious coupling and evolving as a family.
Mm-hmm. So in the real world, I mean, we're talking about, you know, ideas here. What are you actually doing for couples? Sorry, like if a couple wants to work with you, how do they approach you, and what do you do with them?
Well, through email.
Okay.
And the, you know, I've performed some marriages. I've worked with, you know, maybe one person in the couple or the other person in the couple. But, you know, this is the start of my, you know, I feel like I'm launching this whole project into the world right now, where the whole thing needs to really start somewhere. And so I'm in a starting process of creating programs for couples to stable and create a stable foundation using EFT and Reiki, and hypnosis is amazing, to discover what is the current blueprint. That is the really most important thing, because that's what everything's built on.
Yeah.
And our blueprint is often unconscious.
Yeah.
So it's really bringing the unconscious patterns, belief systems up to the surface so they can be examined.
Yeah.
It's kind of like felling trees so you can build your foundation.
Yeah.
You need to decide which trees you want and which ones are just in the way.
Yeah.
So when we determine which trees are in the way, then we use the tools to cut them down.
Yeah.
And then you have the space to build your foundation and then go up from there.
And then you can get solar.
You can get solar. There you go.
I know. That's one thing that's just funny, because when Ron goes to a house, he has to look at the trees, and some of the trees have to come down.
Yeah.
It's funny to let the sun in.
Exactly. But really, that's what we're doing here in life from my viewpoint. And the other thing that I think is really important is the children that are being born today, the souls that are coming onto this planet, are forwarding consciousness at a very rapid rate. They do not want to waste time.
Yeah.
And they really are looking to accelerate love. You know, they're really doing this. And so that's where my heart is, too, is to create really cozy nests for these souls to be born into. And that's important, because when these kids that are coming onto the planet are so in love with life, they really are, and they come in with a wisdom and an open heart, and they're, it would be really nice for us to create the environment for them to come where they can stay open. Mm-hmm. And currently, our environment isn't that open for this process. Mm-hmm. When they start school, they start to contract. They hit conditions, you know, the way that they need to be and how to be in the world. And they're picking up information in the world at a very rapid rate. And this summer, I was doing hypnosis out in Avon for a very busy hypnosis center. And I worked with so many amazing children. And I discovered some new things. And the teenagers that I was working with blew my mind. They were, and I don't think it's just because they were from west of the river, but I believe that the children that have come onto the planet post 9/11 are really navigating very uniquely. And I had this one girl, she came to me and she touched my heart very deeply. She plops into my chair. She came in independently of a parent. She plops in my chair and she says, "Does this really work?" And I said, she goes, "Well, some people say it does and some people say it doesn't." And I said, "Well, it really depends on your motivation. Are you motivated?" And she says, "Oh, yes, I'm very motivated." So I said, "Then it will work." Well, she had a very interesting eating disorder where she could not eat food that was prepared and unwrapped. So she was living on granola bars, and she just was overwhelmed. Now she was 16, a teenager, and she was like, "This just isn't working."
So all the food she ate had to come out of a package.
Out of a package.
Whoa.
And she, but the outcome of it is fascinating. Okay. And this is what I'm talking about with marriage and with creating safe nests. It's really interesting because her mom came in. The mom needed to sign a waiver because she was under 18. So the child says, "Well, tell her about that thing that happened to me when I was a baby." So the mom's filling out the medical forms, and she says, "Oh, yeah, when she was her first month of life, she projectile vomited everything."
Oh.
And I don't, you may know the health circumstances. The mom explained to me that if she was a boy, this valve that connects something, maybe the duodenum or something.
Right. She probably had what's called pyloric stenosis. The valve, the bottom valve between the stomach and the small intestine was tight. So go ahead.
Okay. So the mom said it's a condition that's not common in girls, but it's very common in boys.
It might have been that.
And so she said if she was a boy, it would have been detected. She would have had the surgery and, you know, all would be well. But she went an entire month projectile vomiting. So the mom leaves and I do the session with the girl. And, you know, and part of doing a really good session with a client is having a really good intake with them. So
always.
Yeah, that's where, you know, you get a lot of the pieces of the puzzle. And so she said something to me, and all of a sudden I was like, wait a minute. And I started to do a countdown of where she was in her life when 9/11 hit. She was in her third trimester. In utero.
Wow.
So the mom contracted, had all these fears about being under attack.
Yeah.
And it was translated and transferred to the child in utero.
Oh, wow.
So now she had this fear that she was under attack. So then she's got germ phobia. So she's afraid. She's always washing her hands. She's afraid to touch things. She's afraid of people touching her food. And so this idea that I'm under attack was superimposed over this food makes me sick reality. So she had these two big major conditions that she picked up as a baby.
Yeah.
That now dictated the course of her life.
Whoa.
So after her first session, she started to eat strawberries.
Nice.
Strawberries.
Yeah.
And then after her second session, she ate food prepared by her parents. After her third session, her goal was to go out to have a meal with her friends.
Nice.
And she went and she had a meal with her friends. She went out like a regular teenager.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of, I don't feel that she's unique.
That's fabulous, Eagle Moon.
Isn't that cool?
It is really cool. I mean, you held a safe space for this girl to understand what was going on with her. And I mean, you must have helped her feel really safe and helped her to understand what was really going on with her. And you gave her permission to live her life fully. And she accepted the permission. That's mind-blowing. Three sessions that you were able to, that's huge.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really impressive.
And then this is the caveat. After her first session, you know, the mom leaves and I'm wondering who's going to pay for this service. And so after the session, she says, would you take a check? And I'm thinking the mom gave her a check. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, your mom gave you a check? And she goes, no, did she have to? And I said, no. She writes me a check. And I look, and it's a trustee account.
Oh.
So this girl chose to invest this inheritance that she received from an aunt that passed away. The aunt told her, I want you to invest this in something you believe is worthwhile.
Oh my.
And she says to me, I believe my life is worthwhile, don't you?
Whoa! And she's 16. She says this.
16 years old.
That's mind-blowing.
Yeah. So I know she's not alone. And she was in all the kids that I'm encountering. I was not a child that talk therapy would have been effective. And this is not to say that talk therapy is not a great therapy.
It's great for people, for some people, for lots of people at certain times. And maybe some, for some things it's great, and for other things it's not in the same person. It just depends.
Right.
Yeah.
But what I'm discovering is kids do not want to be medicated, and they do not want to have talk therapy, and they don't want to be institutionalized. They want to handle what's going on in their life, and they want to move on.
Uh-huh. And so they want the brief therapy.
Well, it's, I mean, that girl did not, that was not brief. That was just having somebody that knew how to navigate her to the source of her issue.
Yeah.
That's really the key. Is you,
I know, but three sessions.
Three sessions.
That's sort of falls under the sort of brief therapy banner.
Yeah, that is pretty brief.
Although the thing with brief therapy, my understanding of the idea of brief therapy is somebody comes in with an acute problem and you deal with that acute problem in the now and you don't necessarily go back and look at the origins of it. Your therapy was technically brief because it was three sessions. But
right.
You got to the heart of a very deep, you got to, I mean, pre-birth. This is an issue that emanated pre-birth, and you took her from that point to the present. So that's sort of not the brief therapy, because it did go back into her past to figure out what was going on. So it's kind of both. I mean, it was brief because it didn't take a lot of sessions, but it wasn't brief because you went all the way back.
And she was motivated.
Yes.
So she was.
That's so fabulous.
I know. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah.
But that's the other point that I want to educate people with, is that there's an unawareness that our consciousness does not start when we come out of our moms, that our consciousness begins in utero and beyond. And their kids are in hypnosis. They pick up information. And they're processing it, and the subconscious mind takes everything literally. And that's the thing. We don't know what our influence is on other people, and especially on children. And I take great offense that TV is on everywhere. And I think that as human beings, we need to do a better job at safeguarding our young people, because TV and news broadcasts that are really inappropriate, what we broadcast on the news is often rated R. We cannot take our children to a rated R movie, but yet we can watch it in McDonald's. There's a problem there. And I sat in the airport after the Houston shooting in the church, and I was sitting with two young children under the TV. And I was trying to get that TV shut off for those children.
Yeah.
And the airport personnel were like, no, we have no control over the TV. And I'm like, who has control over the TV?
Good question.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
So we're not creating safety for kids. Kids are afraid. And we need to really be aware of that. We have to do a better job at that.
Yeah.
And that's where I feel like my, you know, mission extends, you know, like make love, not war. We have to stop perpetuating fear in order to really guide our children. And
we have a really nasty situation, at least in the U.S. and possibly in Western society, in that we create fear. Fear spurs capitalism. When you're afraid, you're going to go spend money.
Right.
And the news breeds fear. And if you have a fearsome enough broadcast, you'll be glued to the TV. And then literally in between the TV broadcasts are commercials.
Right.
But,
and you're in hypnosis.
Yes. And so you're hypnotized. And then you're like, oh, I should go spend money on whatever they're telling me about. So they feed off each other, the fear and the capitalism. The fear, you'll spend money when you're afraid. And when you look at people who hoard, who spend a lot of money, they're doing that out of fear. That if it felt more safe and secure, they wouldn't need to spend money. But literally, like today, we're looking at a possibility of a snowstorm. And it's not really clear how bad the snowstorm is going to be. But, you know, people have in the back of their minds, we're going to have to watch to see what's going on. And tomorrow, you know, school may be canceled or school may be, there may be a delay. And you don't know what it's going to do, but you're going to stay glued to the TV to find out what the heck is going on so you know how to plan your life. But I know for me, I'm a little concerned about it because I don't know how it's going to, there's a bunch of parts that's going to move. But that's just one example. And you're right. Like if you have your, you know, your 24-hour news stations on running all the time, it's in your face. It's jarring. It's upsetting. And it's putting fear into the whole environment. And children are super sensitive to that sort of thing. And they're right. going to pick it up.
I had a unique experience years ago. I was sailing from Miami to Bimini, and we were going across the Gulf Stream.
Yeah. Oh.
And so we flew down to Miami, got on my dad's boat, and then we were going to the Bahamas. And
yeah.
I was like, I didn't realize how afraid I was of the Gulf Stream.
Cool.
And, you know, there's lots of stories about storms kicking up really fast and, you know, the water is really deep. Your depth sounder doesn't even read how deep it is. And so we're leaving Miami and there's huge waves. And I'm like, you know, sitting on the boat, but, and I had a 3-year-old daughter with me and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this. I can't believe it. And it's really wavy and choppy and it's really scary. And my higher self says to me, you're creating the storm. And I was like, what? And it was so clear. It's your fear that's stirring up the water. And I was petrified. And my dad never aborts a mission. Well, my dad decided we're going back to the harbor and we'll try again the next day. So I was like, oh, phew, I can handle my fear.
Yeah.
So I did. I handled my fear, and the next day I was really excited and we're gung-ho. So we set sail, the sun's out, and we sailed all the way. It was a 35-mile sail through the Gulf Stream.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lightning storm at our tail.
Whoa.
We were ahead of the storm the entire way.
No kidding. We got
to the island. And that storm stayed offshore of the island. And now it's like three, we couldn't leave the island. We had to stay there because of the storm. And I was reading a magazine, and this family sailed for 36 hours in the South Pacific. And I said to my husband at the time, can you imagine somebody sailed for 36 hours? And he says, well, you're doing 24. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm not. I'm not doing 24 hours. And he says, going from Bimini Island to Nassau is a 24-hour sail. And I'm like, no way, I'm not doing this. So I'm like getting the charts, figuring they're wrong. There's got to be a shortcut. Well, there was no shortcut. Mm. So we set sail, and it's really windy and gray and scary. But when we left the island where we were sailing for numerous hours, the water was shallow. So he says, well, this isn't bad. If the boat sinks, we can all hold on to the mast. And I took great comfort in that, thinking how fabulous, we could all hold on to the mast. And I was feeling good. Now, this was a lifetime fear, being in the dark, offshore, in deep water. So I calmed down. There was a boat anchored in the rum line. That's like being on the, it's like an RV parking in the middle of a highway. So we almost hit this boat because it was where it wasn't supposed to be, but I saved the day. And I was like, I saved the day. This is great. I can handle this. And I was feeling really good being on the boat. Well, we go down at 9 o'clock to go to sleep, and my dad comes out and he's sailing. And so we put Eliana to bed. And we slept till midnight. And now the stars are out. The moon is out. The breeze is great. It's just this gorgeous evening, midnight. And my dad's like, you're going to love this sail. It's so beautiful out. The wind is steady. Everything's great. So I was like, oh, good. I'm so proud of myself. I'm here. I'm doing a 24-hour sail. So we go out. 5 minutes, I'm out there feeling good about myself. And my husband says, can you believe that this water is more than a mile deep?
Oh.
And I start to hyperventilate.
Oh.
I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. My worst fear, dark, on a boat, offshore, deep water.
But doesn't your dad know what he's doing? It sounds like he did.
Yeah. Well, this was just my own,
So you had some trust issues.
Well, this was a lifetime fear.
Yeah.
It came from another lifetime of sinking in a boat,
Sure.
I mean, it was an unrealistic fear.
Yeah.
But still a fear. It was a very deep fear. So to speak. But I breathed through it, and I just felt it, knowing I could be afraid or I could love what I was doing.
Yeah.
So it was a very transformative moment.
Yeah.
And I just breathed, and I just felt how afraid I was, and, just kind of was present with it in love.
Yeah.
I was in the moment of love.
Yeah.
And it passed within minutes.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, my God, this is great. This is great. But I'm sharing that story because I want to know fear can be transformed very quickly.
Yeah.
Breathe and feel it.
Yeah.
Just keep moving.
Right.
And, recognizing your face, you're safe, you're safe. But you have to feel the fear. Otherwise, it's going to be like picking a scab all the time. You have to feel it.
Sure.
So once I did that, it was extraordinary. It was just so fabulous.
Yeah.
And that was the start of this really wonderful Bahamas adventure.
Oh, that's so great. Because the thing is, you have this fear from another lifetime that's making it so you can't be in the present. And in the present right now, you have your husband, you have Eliana. Were Dylan and Ayla there? Or no?
No, it was just the three of us.
So it's just you and Mark and Eliana
and
both your parents. How wonderful is that? That's something you really want to be present for. And your dad knows how to sail. And he's like, he wants to give his daughter and his family this beautiful experience. And you're going to get to see the stars, and we're on the water, and it's really beautiful. And the thing with what I like to think about when I think about deep water is it doesn't really matter how, if you can swim, that doesn't matter how deep the water is. You know, I mean, you could sink, I suppose, but I mean, if you know how to swim, who cares how deep it is? I don't know. Do you know how to swim?
Yeah, I know how to swim.
And you also probably had life jackets. Because if you have a life jacket, it doesn't matter if it's 4 feet or 100 feet because you're going to float.
Yeah, but that's a rational mind.
But it's also, you have to, but there's an element of trust there that you had to work through your fear so you could be in the present. Because if you're in the present, one of your choices, you can trust your father that he knows what the heck he's doing. You could also trust your ability to swim. You could trust the life.
It's my ability to sail and survive myself.
There's a bunch of trust issues there. Yeah. But so that's really beautiful. Like you said, you were able to breathe and be with it and transform it. And then you were able to like be there with your family and have this great experience. So everything went well and you made it to Nassau and it was nice.
Yeah, it was great.
Wonderful. Yeah. That's so terrific.
Yeah. And, you know, in this moment, I want to say EFT or tapping is a really great transformative.
Yes, it tell
really
everybody
helps.
What EFT is.
Well, right now, the Tapping World Summit is going on, which is amazing. This is the 11th year that they've done it.
What does EFT stand for?
Emotional Freedom Technique.
And what is it?
It's also known as that tapping thing.
That tapping thing. So tell us, what do you do? What is it?
So you tap on the endpoints of your meridians.
And what's
that
a meridian?
The meridians are the energy system that runs, you hear more about it in Chinese medicine.
Right.
And, you know, acupuncture, acupressure. But we have these, I refer to them, it's like the subway system of our body. We know about
that's
the veins.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
The energetic subway system of our body. That's brilliant. I love that. I'm going to tell Nicole.
So that's the way I see it. And what the energetic system does is it keeps the energy moving and circulating through the body so that the body can be well nourished. And if you have blockages in any of those meridians, it creates a distortion in the way that you see life. Like my block of being, like that fear was a block within me. So I couldn't see the beauty of where I was on the boat.
Yeah.
So frequently this happens. We have emotional fear or limiting beliefs or ideas that may start as like, it's like building a snowman. It could start like a small handful of snow. But then as you roll it through the snows of life, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and creates blockages, which then creates illness and disease. And disease is just an inability to relax where you are, be relaxed in the body and relaxed in, you know, your thinking, your peace of mind. So what EFT does, and I explain it like if you had a jump rope and you go back to being a child, and you wiggled the handle that's in your right hand, what happens to the jump rope? You know, pretty much the wave goes from the right handle all the way to the left handle. So when we tap on the endpoints of our meridians, we're essentially wiggling the handle of the jump rope. And that wave goes through the entire meridian, jiggling and wiggling any stuck energy
that's
in there.
Yeah.
And then it releases it. And when you release it, you have a new viewpoint. You have a new outlook.
Yeah.
You see things differently.
Or
your cold gets better.
Yeah.
You know, you'll get new ideas. And it changes very quickly. I remember there, if you want to see a cool video, go to emofree.com. There's a video on there where they have six blood samples. Three are labeled sick blood and three are healthy blood. So they take the three that have the sick blood and they do 15 minutes or so of EFT with those people. Then they retest the blood and the blood is now healthy blood. And it's really amazing because when you see the slides that they show you on the video, and they interview a nutritional therapist that's explaining that if they did nutritional therapy in the protocol that they were taught to do, it would take 2 months to get the same results as EFT.
Oh, my.
So, you know, we're in a time now where we have a lot of tools, but a lot of people are not aware of these tools.
Yeah.
Where we can transform our lives very quickly, or we could be very, you know, I don't want to say slow because I don't feel that slow is bad. You know, we all move differently. You know, you have basketball players that are very quick, and then you have more sloth-like people that like to amble. So in the world today, we have tools that can accommodate all abilities to transform. Some people want to move quick. Some people want to amble.
Yeah.
So.
And some days you want to amble, and other days you want to go fast.
You want to move forward.
In the same person.
Yeah.
So let's make sure we get to tell everybody about all the other cool things that you're going on. So you one of the things you're doing is Reiki.
Yeah.
And how can Reiki help families?
Oh, this is so cool. This is where I'm just so delighted with being able to teach people Reiki so that they can use it on their children. And when my children were young, I think I learned Reiki. My son was 2, maybe a little less than that. And he was a really sturdy, strong boy that moved very, very quickly. But if he cried, his pain tolerance was very strong and very high. So if he was upset, you knew it was really big. So he would toddle over to me. And I would put my hands on him very quickly and Reiki him very, very quickly, like seconds, like 30 seconds. And it would be enough for him to move on and just go about his life. Well, what's wonderful about Reiki is it keeps the energy flowing. So as I was explaining a little bit about Reiki or EFT, Reiki works on the energy system too, and it's working on the belief system, it's working on your mental, emotional body, it's working on your spiritual body and your physical body. So if you have a sick child, Reiki is really, really great at helping maintain the immune system of the child and really helping with bumps and bruises, flus, any type of illness. Extremely helpful. It's also very good for colic and really, like if you're a nursing mom, Reikiing your baby while you're nursing, it's great for childbirth. It's really great for intimacy with your husband. It's, and it helps children sleep. And it just really brings more peace. You know, we move through life. Kids are so busy, and the activities that they do are often very busy. We don't tend to bring in as much quiet as many of us might enjoy, children as well. And so Reiki is a really great way to sit, cuddle, read a bedtime story, and share Reiki at the same time. So it can be a therapy. You can go to a Reiki practitioner and receive a Reiki treatment, which is fabulous. Unlike massage, you're fully dressed. It's great for people who may have been sexually abused or molested in some way and don't want to be touched. The entire treatment can be done above the body, so you don't have to be touched. And what Reiki does is it really allows healing and you to keep the energy moving in your body so that your physical body is energetically nourished. It keeps you connected universally. It keeps you growing through any spiritual learning you might be going through. So there's lots of ways that you can use it in a family.
Yeah.
And in a relationship.
That's great.
And I do have a Reiki training this weekend.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really encouraging parents to join in because no time like the present. If you're inspired and excited about bringing a new technique into your family, this is, you know, an opportunity to begin now.
Right. Oh, great. So how do people contact you if they are interested in the training?
They can go to my website or email me at eaglemoon.rays, R-A-E-S, at icloud.com.
Very good. And so that, and then they can find out where it is and
yeah, it's
all the
in Hebron, so it's local.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Great. That's great. So you're going to teach people how to do Reiki.
I am.
Nice. That is very exciting. So you also have some customized subliminal hypnosis programs that you're doing?
I do. And that is, I designed those in 2006 for young people because at the time, the young people were, my belief was, you know, they're too busy to come to a hypnotist and sit in a chair for 45 minutes for a session. So I wanted to create something that will enable them to transform their lives in the busy world. So what I use is their playlist. And at the time, kids were plugged into their iPods and their phones all the time. And so I would take their playlist and then I would create their program underneath it. And as I said earlier, kids are picking up ideas just by being on the planet that we're unaware of. So there's three tracks of information under the playlist, and they don't hear this, but there's an imprint removal track, which kind of weeds out the garden. It weeds out all those things that somebody on the planet may have picked up, anything that interferes with your joy, your happiness, your productivity, your ability to learn, remember, being happy to be you, and so that's one track of information. Then there's a Reiki track under there where I align with the client. And Reiki is something that brings you into the space of oneness. So you don't need to be in the physical space of somebody, but just being able to connect with them on an energetic or spiritual level, you can feel what's needed. And that's another aspect of the CD is I bring in the Reiki energy that is optimal for the client, and then an inspired message from their higher self, their guardian angel, their soul, whatever your terminology is for that soul purpose point of view of being alive today. And then all those tracks of information are mixed under the music. All they listen to is their music. But yet this whole thing's going on. And the feedback I get from teenagers, and A.J. Pollock was my first CD. He was my experiment. And A.J. Pollock is now playing professional baseball with the Diamondback.
Nice.
And yeah, it was exciting to watch him. It was just really exciting. And so I made him three CDs when he was at Notre Dame. And it was exciting. But the feedback from the kids is that they really love the message that they get from their higher self. It really, they can feel the truth of it. It seems to put them back on their life purpose. It realigns them in a way that's unique to each client, and it brings them peace. Now, I've gotten feedback from a teenager that I made a CD for when he was a junior in high school years ago. He ran into my daughter in December or some, like in the fall. And when he found out that she was my daughter, like he was really good friends with my older son. And he was like, "Your mom totally changed my life." He said, "That CD that she made me," he said, "completely changed my life." He says, "At that time, I was always getting hurt." He was a soccer player. He was repeatedly breaking his collarbone.
Oh.
Yeah. And so he had this repeat injury.
Oh.
And then what he said was that his viewpoint changed. Mm-hmm. Nobody had an outlook that he would achieve anything. And he went on and he got two college degrees.
That's so exciting.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it is. So we have to kind of wrap up. So I want to make sure that you've said everything that you feel complete, that you've told the universe everything you want to say. And one more time, we have been speaking with Eagle Moon Rays, who is a hypnotist and a practitioner of Reiki and Avatar. Also, of course, mother of three. And she's doing some exciting things for couples and for teenagers. And, you know, there's probably something she can help you with. And once again, Eagle Moon, how do we get in touch with you if we would like to?
So you can email me at eaglemoon.rays, R-A-E-S, at icloud.com. And my website is eaglemoon-rays, R-A-E-S.com.
Very good. So it's so great to have you here once again, Eagle Moon. You have a lot to offer, and there's a lot of very exciting things going on. And the things that Eagle Moon has to offer, I have to say, are very profound, but also very simple and elegant. So if you're interested, certainly go to her website and contact her and find out more about what she's got going on. So that was a lot of fun. So we have to sign off now. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM. WHUS Stores.